Welcome back to another episode of Stats for Lefties. Today I interviewed Alexis, who is the founder of Labour for Trans Rights. We talked activism, Labour, and in the fun half, gaming, and we'll see which one of us has more hours than Fallout New Vegas. So be sure to check that out if you're subbed on Patreon. Anyway, let's get into it. As a start, you are the founder of Labour for Trans Rights. Can you start by telling us more about that organisation and why you started it?
Okay, so Labour for Trans Rights came about in August of last year, 2022, after previously I attended a conference of 2021. And that was a sort of we assumed at the time was the height of transphobia in the Labour Party. And at the time, I'd wanted to organise a sort of small ad hoc demonstration. But unfortunately, the combination of a cold and some rather unkind things said by GB News viewers towards me after a tweet of mine was picked up kept me from doing that. The following year, however, I was on the Momentum Leo Panitch programme, where we were discussing organising campaigns, funnily enough. And the idea suddenly popped back into my head that perhaps it would be a good idea to begin organising some kind of rally, given that the situation had become so much more dire. And that led to me reaching out to a couple of people I knew, a couple of people in the Young Labour space who knew people. And before long, we had a small collection of people who had gathered together around this idea of hosting the group. And we went on to hold the event in Liverpool. It was a rousing success, despite the fact that it was terribly planned by me, all my fault. I basically tried to run the whole thing on my own, having no previous experience of organising.
Well, it seems like it went pretty well, so there's no need to beat yourself up about it.
It did go really well. We got a lot of positive feedback. We got a lot of positive press about it. And so we started to expand our scope, started to bring some more people in. And so now we have an organisation comprised of members from across the Labour Party, across the breadth of the Labour Party, from Momentum to Open Labour. And we have a lot of positive things said about us from people on the other side of the party as well. Because this is truly an issue that transcends factionalism. And we're committed to, as much as we can, trying to collaborate with councillors and MPs and promote the campaign of trans rights within the Labour Party through whatever means are available to us. We're not quite as polite as perhaps some people wish we would be, and we're not quite as direct as some people wish we would be, but we're doing our best to try and keep up the fight.
You are, however, a lot more direct than LGBT plus Labour is.
Yes.
I would describe their attitude towards the Labour leadership as non-existent, and their attitude towards their own members and supporters as also non-existent. It seems that they're ignoring the existence of both.
Well, I should say a world exclusive. I'm standing in the LGBT Labour elections at the upcoming AGM. I think the problem with LGBT Labour is there are a lot of people in there who do genuinely have an idea of what the problem is. They're just afraid of upsetting the status quo. They need to feel like that they need to keep their insider status. And I think that's really holding them back from, you know, actively contributing to the struggle here. Because we've been in meetings and we've seen and we've talked to members of LGBT Labour directly. We've told them our experience. The trans caucus that they hold is very clear about the fact that, you know, we're very unhappy with things. Whether or not they choose to listen to that and take it on board and actively say that, you know, we're going to criticize the statements that Keir Starmer makes, that's another thing altogether. And it's one of the reasons why I'm running for the position of co-chair of LGBT Labour, to hold the party accountable, to not be unafraid to speak up and say that the party is, you know, alienating its core voters. We've seen so many people leave the party already. Enough is enough. You can't rely on our guaranteed support. You have to show us that you're willing to step up. you can't come to Pride and expect us to cheer you. You can't say that you support us and expect us to bow down and thank you for it. You know, you've got to win our trust, win our support. And if you're not willing to do that, then what are you there for? What is the Labour Party there for?
One can have issues with an organisation, but if it's a democratic organisation, one can change it. But it doesn't seem like there's a very clear way to change LGBT Labour, which is why you yourself felt necessary to found an external organisation, because there doesn't seem a way to change it. Though, of course, I wish you the best of luck in doing so. My second question was, there are quite a few trans people who have left Labour due to the party's position on trans rights, not just those of individual MPs, but like the leadership and the shadow cabinet. However, you and other people in Labour for Trans Rights have remained in the party. Could you tell us why you've chosen to stay?
Well, first and foremost, because I'm a huge masochist. Secondly, I've wrestled with this question myself for so many years at this point. I went to 2021 conference basically as a final last gamble on the dice to try and see if, you know, I still wanted to be in the party, because at that point I was becoming so completely disillusioned. Oh, the sweet innocent days when I thought it couldn't get any worse than that. So I went to conference there thinking that, you know, either I'll fall back in love with the party or I'm out and I'll find some other career and like calling in life to go down to help people. But it's connecting with other members, particularly around Young Labour, I found where I really sort of reconnected and rediscovered the sort of campaigning spirit and the desire to do activism and stuff. I must fully admit, you know, the rhetoric of stay and fight is really starting to sort of bash into a wall when it comes to looking at the current state of the Labour Party, even over the weekend. You know, it's hard to sit there and look at the party, and as much as some people would demand that we force a smile and say that everything's fine, I think we know that the truth is that Labour is in, you know, an uncomfortable place right now.
I mean, we're recording this on the day that Jamie Driscoll announced that he's going to run as an independent for North East Mayor after he was blocked and the police commissioner for that region was nominated. I saw the numbers. It was with 76% of the vote against a candidate who nobody really knew anything about. No, I have personally felt that remaining in Labour has felt... I didn't feel as if there was any clear leadership for those of us who wanted to challenge the Starmer project. And indeed, those who have tried to lead the way have been independents. Like Corbyn's now an independent, not through any choice of his own. Driscoll's an independent. But I don't know. That's how I feel about it.
Well, I think the thing to say is that, you know, particularly when it comes to the trans, to the issue of trans rights, I'm not going to judge anyone who's left the party. I know that there is a lot of sneering from people about the idea of leaving the Labour Party and, you know, how could you possibly want to do anything else? But when the party's become so transphobic, I can't hold it against anyone who wants to say, no, I'm not supporting this any longer. I think from my position, Labour is, you know, currently in the grips of Starmer, but it's also just a tool. Like the party itself is malleable. It's changing with time. The trade union backing is probably the thing that gives it the most chance of being the mechanism for change in this country. So long as we, you know, as long as some of us are there keeping up the fight, it won't be entirely lost. You know, I think it's important to remember that we went from 1997, we went from Blair, and within the span of three leaders, we had Corbyn.
It was quite remarkable, actually. I do remember somebody observed the other day that it only was between the invasion of Iraq and Corbyn's election of leader was just 12 years. And that's the same period of time since the 2010 election and, like, now. Like, if not less. And that was a moment of... you ever seen, I think it's Band of Brothers or There's a scene, I think it's Leo DiCaprio. He suddenly fades into a new scene and he's suddenly really old. That's what I felt.
Oh, it's Saving Private Ryan, and it's Matt Damon, not.
Oh God, look, they look the same. It's not my fault. The third question I had, broadly speaking, what do you think that trans people and their allies can do to push for trans rights that's most productive, whether under Labour in, you know, from next year probably, or now? Like, what's the most productive thing they can do?
So I think there are two different answers to give here. Number one, to trans people specifically. Trans people shouldn't have to be on the front lines. We shouldn't have to be risking our health and well-being in order to, you know, fight for our survival as we are. I fully accept the risks I've sort of inherited because I was an idiot and decided to, I wanted to do politics with my life. So I've gone down that path, but others shouldn't have to, you know, face that kind of pressure and that kind of resistance to their existence. So, you know, survival is enough. Survival is enough. If that's what you need to do, then do it. For those who can, I'd say that the most important thing is rallying together, building networks and community organizations with one another. You know, join your local solidarity groups, join renters unions, join trade unions. You know, get those grassroots connections with other people, build that movement from the ground up. That's how a change and a positive impact can come in day to day. Because as much as I want to say, you know, oh, everyone join the Labour Party and we'll take, there's nowhere near enough of us to do that.
So it's more of a need to build social movements style of thing, you mean?
Yes. I think the most important thing that trans people can do at this time is to build grassroots level movements and connections with one another, because that's at the end of the day, from my work in local governance and communities, that is where most of the impact comes from. You know, all this talk about central government, it always comes down to local groups who are putting the legs in and doing the work. As for allies, they're not doing enough, especially in Labour. You know, it's not good enough for them to, you know, tweet out a statement of solidarity and smile and take some photos with some flags and then, you know, turn around and uncritically support Keir Starmer and Wes Streeting. Allies need to be willing to stand up to defend trans people. They need to be willing to help support both in terms of material, getting the voice out, supporting financially where you can.
Do you think it's for a lot of elected officials? I mean, we've already seen a few people get deselected. Obviously, we spoke about Driscoll, Beth Winter, I think. One of them, of course, is Mick Whitley, who was vocally supportive of trans people from what I saw. I don't think, you know, it's not why he was deselected, but it was an unfortunate loss of someone who even had just been vocally supportive. Do you think there's a way in which, because obviously it feels to me as if a lot of these people are afraid because they're worried they'll be deselected or marginalized or sacked. What do you think there's anything that we can do as trans people and allies to sort of counteract that? And that's kind of why I think a lot of us have left the Labour Party. And I am interested to hear people like your view on this, that like a lot of us feel that if we take our votes away and say, you're not winning our votes right now, and if you want to get them back, you have to be like, you have to stand up for people. But I know that people within Labour take a different view.
Well, I take the sort of more holistic view that it is through our combined efforts that we are able to provoke change. I think it is both the people who have fallen out of love with Labour over the past few years who we can point to and say, look at what you're doing to, you know, look at what you're doing to our siblings, look at what you're doing to our friends and family. You are the responsible for this. You're the cause of this. You know, I know for a fact that we have people on the NEC from all sides who are strongly supportive of trans rights, and it's my hope that very soon we'll have words with MPs from across the party who we can similarly talk to about, you know, why it's so important, and also, you know, what not challenging this means in the long term. You want to talk about equalities. Well, the same people who are funding the attack on trans people are the same people who are going to be funding the attacks on bodily autonomy and the right to abortion next, which we don't even have in this country.
Yeah, so it's getting an abortion in this country is not fully legal, and it's so strange that most people don't realize that.
Well, you can thank 55 Tufton Street.
Well, I mean, in the sense that it hasn't been repealed, yes, but it's we've had these laws on the books, right, for decades now, since the Abortion Act in the 1960s, and they just haven't been updated. But it definitely feels as if the priorities of American feminists and British feminists have been very different, and abortion feels like it's been quite central to that. I don't know what you think of this, right? So my theory is that British feminists are less inclusive of trans people in general, or at least a strong minority are, very vocal minority are less inclusive, because they haven't been focused on the question of bodily autonomy for the past like 50 years in the same way that American feminists have. American feminists are constantly fighting, at the moment, a rearguard action against the elimination of abortion rights. And I feel that on a theoretical level, they see it as linked to trans rights because it's about bodily autonomy. Do you think that that difference is maybe explains why so many British feminists just seem open to taking away other people's bodily autonomy because they haven't worried about it for themselves?
I hadn't really considered it in that lens before, but thinking about it, no, that does make a lot of sense as to why. I mean, yeah, I think it's one of the things that we sort of take for granted is we think, you know, oh, well, we're so much more enlightened than the Americans. They're still squabbling about this, and we don't have to worry about this. We have the enlightened NHS. Our healthcare is perfect. We would never have any issues. So I think there's definitely an element to it of, you know, being blindsided on the issue of bodily autonomy. But I think as well, a larger issue is you just got some big snake oil salesmen who are eager to put that lobbyist religious right money to work.
Yes, no, it is quite remarkable. I was talking to Jesso Thompson about this the other day, about how much influence the American evangelical right has over various campaign groups in British politics. And I mean, I don't even think we're that special. There's plenty of evidence of them, you know, funneling money and support to various homophobic organizations across the world in order to get anti-gay laws and anti-trans laws enacted. And it's very frustrating to me that people can't seem to see what's going on. I don't like to bring people on just to talk about one specific thing about them. It doesn't seem fair. So let's talk about Labour more broadly and ideologically. So what prompted you to join the party in the first place?
So I was a massive nerd as a child. I
can't relate.
Yeah. Can't relate. I grew up sort of lightly dabbling in politics, and I hesitate to admit that I watched a lot of sort of early debate YouTube whilst that was a thing. So I've always had that weird nerdy politics side to me. I sort of figured out my politics very early on. So I've pretty much been a socialist from the moment I knew what the word meant. you know, the first political argument I ever have was with my family over a lunch, where I was talking about how people should have healthcare, and you know, from there it was pretty much off to the races. So I joined Labour in 2014. In case anyone wants to accuse me of only having joined for one man, excuse you, I joined for Chaos with Ed Miliband. And I joined specifically because of the trade union connections and the history of Labour as the predominant left wing organisation in Britain. So, you know, from an early age, politically speaking, I fell in love with Tony Benn and Michael Foot, and you know, I read about the 1983 manifesto and I looked at it and I thought, huh, boy howdy, that sure seems quite nice. I sure do hope that the next time we get a manifesto like that, people actually vote for it.
Moving on.
Yeah, poor old Naivy.
Don't talk about that. Listen, it's the deal, right? The Labourite don't talk about the 2017 election. We don't talk about the 2019 election. We pretend it didn't happen. So there's an unspoken agreement. Both sides of the party pretend that the last, like, several years didn't exist. It's still 2014. I'm still, like, you know,
look,
I'm still looking much, much younger, and I have different glasses. My hair isn't pink. What happened?
I'm still convinced that the year 2017 didn't happen. I'm time locked to think that it's still the end of 2016.
We went straight from 2016 to 2018, and there was nothing in between. Nothing happened.
I don't know what happened. Time is a lie designed to sell clocks, and one day I will figure it out.
So I mean, confusing. Listen, you could make quite a few arguments about how, like, time is an imperialist notion, given that, like, the calendar we use was invented by Julius Caesar, the biggest imperialist in history. You joined Labour for the union connections. I mean, people accuse me of not having, like, political diversity in what I cover. When you were joining the Labour Party for, like, social democratic reformism, I was identifying as, like, an anarcho-communist. A little embarrassing, not something I would do now. So, you know, that's the broad coalition. I've moved to the right, you've moved to the left.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I've pretty much from the beginning, you know, I don't mean to brag, but when I joined the Labour Party in 2014, I was still doing my A-levels at sixth form.
Thank you so much for coming on. It was very interesting to hear your views on Labour and what people can do. Oh, before you go, is there anything you would like to plug?
I'd like to plug Labour for Trans Rights. We are fundraising to help send us to conference. Please donate if you are able to. It's helping us to, you know, continue to live and also take the message right to the heart of Labour and afford some cool things that we'll be handing out to people, including, you know, leaflets talking about why trans people are actually not the devil themselves.
That's okay. Well, Labour for Trans Rights, thank you again for coming on, and I hope you have a good rest of your day. I also want to say a particular thank you to the lovely comrades on Patreon who make this episode and all of my content possible by subscribing. Romanan Prasudi, Mohammed Mumit, Duncan Black, Madeline Sheen, Joseph Bailey, Barry James, Neil Barton, Juditha De Silva, Thomas Alexander, Ruth Holliday, Conrad, Mick Mickateer, Chris Gravel, Patrick Lefebvre, Bert Rothkugel, Stephen Carr, Alex Wilson, and Scott Folan. Without your support and the support of all the other patrons, nothing I do would be possible. So be sure to sub to Patreon at patreon.com/leftystats. Thanks very much for supporting my work, guys. I really appreciate it. Have a good day.